97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Welcome back. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Cox. 97.1 FM Talk. Happy to be with you. And we have Nicole Murray from This Morning with Gordon Deal joining us in other news. And Bill Maher is making news, too. We'll talk about that this hour. There's just so much going on. And if you missed any of our segments from before, the Odyssey app you can use to rewind, or maybe you're just hopping in the car now. Sounds like a beautiful morning in St. Louis. I love the mornings where you can roll the window down for two different reasons. One, I like the free air conditioning. And two, I'm cheap and I don't like to run the AC in my car if I don't have to.
That's fine. I just like it because it's been so hot here. Upper 90s with the heat index, you know, over 100. And so, oh my gosh, this weekend was amazing. It was 60s and 70s and it was just beautiful.
It's the way to do it. Get the fresh air in the house while you can. Let's do the short list.
The Mark Cox short list.
Historically bad nominees deserve historic levels of scrutiny. We have never seen nominees as flawed, as compromised, as unqualified as we have right now. Republican senators know that.
I don't know. I mean, I guess you could make that argument, but I think you can also make the argument for any other nominees that were made during Barack Obama or Joe Biden, particularly Joe Biden. I think you can go back and really make some of those exact same arguments. So that's how it goes, but they all get nominated. So keep that in mind.
The Democrats need votes from everybody from never Trump conservative Republicans to disaffected socialists to moderates to progressives to liberals. They're all part of the Democratic coalition if we're going to win with 55-58%.
Disaffected socialists are the people that you're trying to get into your party. Those are the ones that you need in order to get a vote. Now, are you listening to yourself? To think the list that you rambled off there, the people that you need in order to put a Democrat on the ballot and win, you're saying that we need to rally the disaffected socialists. That wasn't something that just, you know, on a whim came up. No, that was a calculated thing you said. Keep in mind, if you're a Democrat, you are attracting the socialists in order to win. Just keep that in mind.
My focus has been on the people who have been here, millions of long-term residents of the United States who happen to be undocumented, that have been the target of this administration's increasingly aggressive and cruel arrest, detention, and deportation policies.
Just so happened to be here illegally. Just a small detail there. Just so happened, as in they magically poof were here. I think that so many people had sympathy for the children that had this decision made for them. They had no idea what was going on. And during the first administration, Donald Trump had a plan, which was if you were brought here and you haven't committed any crimes and you don't own a gun and you're contributing to society, then we can look at a pathway here for you to make this good because this was no fault of your own. Democrats rejected that. They did not want that. So keep in mind where we are today. This is the, okay, we're going to have to do it the hard way.
I just can't possibly believe that someone who was attorney general for a good period of time, a United States senator for a good period of time, and then vice president for 4 years and then ran for president, all of a sudden believes that the best way to solve it is from being outside the system. Oh, please.
What do you think of that drop, Kim? Oh, please.
Come on. I'm not buying it either. Kamala Harris, it's 100% the polling. She was leading, surprisingly, in the polls for a while. For governor, she was up top for even 2020 presidential nominee, which is crazy. But I think that the writing was on the wall. I think she looked at the polling and felt, you know what? I don't have a shot to win anymore, and it's not worth it. You know, her pride clearly was hit with the last election. And I think that was ultimately what made her decide, oh, I'm no longer running for, you know, governor, because what was the reason she gave? You know, it's just so broken. I just think I can do more from outside.
Oh, I know, such lies that it's just manipulation. It's lies of manipulation. You looked at it and said, all our polling said that we're going to lose, but let's burn this $1 billion and try anyway, because, you know, we waited too long as a party and they think this is their best option, or at least she forced the hand to make them believe it was the best option. And it wasn't, and it was terrible. And you saw what happened, and Republicans are very happy for it. Now let's fast forward. What I find in, you know, since I'm here in Michigan, I think I draw some comparisons. There's the mayor of Detroit. His name is Mike Duggan. Does that name sound familiar at all?
Mm-mm.
No. So he, it's kind of interesting. You had Detroit, major metropolitan city, in some ways comparable to St. Louis, go through a bankruptcy, come out of a bankruptcy where the state was running their finances in order to set it straight. You had some pretty strong businesses that were driving economic development and, you know, fleecing the government too, taking advantage of the opportunity in order to get these really good deals. And, you know, oh, we'll put this big building up if you don't charge us taxes type of stuff. And of course it runs way over budget. And of course it runs way longer than they say it would. And it doesn't generate nearly as much as they say it would. But, you know, all these major corporations do similar things. And now you have Mike Duggan who comes out and he's the mayor of Detroit. And he's doing a lot of other things that other major cities are doing, which is we're going to change the statistics of what we call a homicide to make it look like, hey, everything's so much better here. Our crime is down, down, down. And I said, look at that. I came in and the city was on bankruptcy and everything was terrible. And I turned things around and everything's great. So I'm going to run for governor, but as an independent. And when people saw that, okay, he's a Democrat running as an independent, they said, that's a weird thing to do. Cuomo in New York. Mm-hmm. After that, he says, maybe I'll do this independent stuff. And now you find people like Kamala Harris, like, huh, someone from outside the system. She's sounding like independent. She's, the way that she's laying this out is, I don't think she can disassociate herself from the party that she ran as a presidential candidate and lost. But she's like, I'm going to start taking some of this independent playbook that these other people are doing, because that seems to be the trend, which is people are tired of left and right. I'm just going to say I'm down the middle as an independent, and I'm going to look at things outside of the system. And I think she is very opportunistic, and she looks at this as her best chances. And a lot of politicians are going to be jumping on that boat, I believe.
Yeah, this will be interesting to see how this all plays out. There's no way Kamala's done for good in politics. She'll do something. I don't know what that would be, but I don't think that she's just going to wash her hands clean of everything. I think she wants the power too much. You know, you see how all these liberals, particularly the young liberals, are looking to Mamdani as kind of their guy right now, which is so alarming. Now, him winning in New York City actually could be a good thing for Republicans, because he's going to, it'll be an epic failure in New York City. So I think that actually could be a good thing for 2028 for any Republicans running, whether it be J.D. Vance or I guess Marco Rubio has kind of already said, no, J.D.'s your guy. I don't think I'm going to be running. But yeah, Mamdani and AOC, that's, I guess, who a lot of these liberals want to lead the Democratic Party, because there really isn't a clear leader right now. Jasmine Crockett has been out there and very loud and proud. But I don't know if I would, if you had to pick a leader of the Democratic Party, maybe you would say that she's trying to get there. But I'm not convinced that she is the leader of the party. I don't think there is a leader right now. And that's a problem.
I know who the leader of the Democratic Party is. Can I tell you who the leader of the Democratic Party is? Donald Trump. It's basically, that's all they spend their time and attention on still. They haven't learned from their mistakes, which is good. I don't want to give free advice to them, but their leader is Donald Trump, which is, we're just going to take whatever he says and say we're against it. Mm-hmm. And they don't have like a real leader leading them. It is the bizarro world Trump, the whoever that they, whatever they don't like and they pin on him, then they're going to say he's the bad guy. That's their leader. And other than that, I can't think of any major Democrat that would have the same power, even as a J.D. Vance. I still think Marco Rubio is such a huge rising star.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, who knows, maybe DeSantis one day will try to get back to the popularity he was at. But he really, I hope he didn't peak out, because that was a kind of a weak peak out for someone of his potential.
I know, and I really like him. I think he's so effective in Florida. And I was a little surprised seeing him kind of flounder when he ran for president. And part of it was, I think, because he was going up against Trump. Maybe things would be different if Trump wasn't in the picture.
Yeah. Yep. I think that's a big part of it. I know we're running late. Did you see the same guy we played right coming out of the break? We might have to play that clip again from CNN's data guru, Harry Enten. But he also said Donald Trump is the most influential president this century, which is that's a big thing. I love he goes, please, about Kamala Harris. But he's also right about Donald Trump, which maybe we debate that coming up after the break. I'm Ryan Recker filling in for Mark Cox. Looking forward to spending time with you this week on 97.1 FM Talk. And I'm Ryan Recker filling in again for Mark Cox. Got the whole week. This is kind of exciting. I tell people, I say, Kim's the best person to work with. Kim, you're so good at what you do. So
thank you.
I see that you've been increasing your role on the Mark Cox Morning Show as well. That's kind of cool.
Thanks.
So congratulations on that. I think it's well-deserved, and I can tell you're doing some great work there.
Thank you. I genuinely, and I know we've talked about this before, but I genuinely really enjoy working with you, so I'm glad to have you here this week while Mark's off.
No, I'll go back to that rumor I heard in the first hour. You said, please, I wish the baby can come early so I don't have to work with Ryan Record.
I tried. The baby decided not to come early.
What do you think of the CNN data guru, Harry Enten? Every time I hear a clip from him, I kind of like him. I like him in the way that he seems pragmatic. And I think I don't want to get too comfy with him. Let me put it that way, because I feel like things could change very quickly. But every time I hear like a clip or a segment from him, I really like him.
Mm-hmm. I mean, especially this latest clip where he's talking about Kamala Harris and he's not buying her reason for not wanting to run for governor in California. The way he says it is so relatable, because I think it's what a lot of us are thinking. You know, come on, you expect us to believe that's the true reason why you're not running?
Oh, please. He goes at the end of this. Let's play clip number 6 if we could again.
I just can't possibly believe that someone who was attorney general for a good period of time, a United States senator for a good period of time, and then vice president for 4 years and then ran for president, all of a sudden believes that the best way to solve it is from being outside the system. Oh, please. Not a chance on God's green earth that that's necessarily the case. What's probably going on is she saw what the polling numbers were, perhaps, for her running for governor of California. Yes, she has left open the idea that maybe she could run in 2028 for the Democratic nomination. But I'll tell you, Abby, I've looked at those numbers. She would be the weakest front runner since 1992. So the bottom line is this. She's looking at the numbers. She knows what's cooking. And then all of a sudden, you know what? Actually, this lifelong politician, I want to be outside the system. Give me a break.
It's
1992.
She's not running in 2028 for president. Do you think that she would? No.
Well, I think that she's, you know what? She's already maxed out the credit card, which they're going to take a while to get out of debt. Well, I would look at that as default. No, we're trying something else here. I'm sorry. You don't have what it takes. I'm sorry. Trying to rebrand herself, rebuild herself in a way where she could bring herself back up. So she looks like an appealing person to put up on the stage. But I think people found out real quick. Remember, everyone pointed out, by the way, when you ran in the primary, how much support did you get? Oh, none? That may mean something moving forward, too. I think they can look at that and say they were probably right about the Kamala Harris thing. But nonetheless, the field of who you would put up as a candidate is so weak, then she might be at least someone that gets an invitation to the party, even if there's no intention to actually.
But it'd be them grasping for straws. So I take it, Ryan, you'll be pre-ordering her new book, 107 Days.
Ugh.
Did you hear about that?
Oh, please.
That's what we need to say all week. Oh, please. It's ridiculous. What is she going to say in that? There is a little bit of curiosity I have with that book. I'm not saying I'm ordering them, but that book and Karine Jean-Pierre. I am very interested to see what they're going to say in those books. More so, Karine Jean-Pierre. What will she reveal? You know how many secrets that woman knows that she has been probably angry about over the last number of months, that maybe this is finally like, okay, I'm just going to come clean about this.
You know, I'm going to relay this to a workplace scenario. This is a generic workplace scenario. And it seems like what's Gen Z? Is that the young one? I can't remember the gens, but the ones that are, you know, 20-year-olds.
Gen Z.
And they're in the workplace and they're like, I'm going to have to quit because, and then they give kind of like a soft reason why they're quitting or something like that. I feel in a way that a lot of these different politicians are like, or at least people in the workforce and really anyone that gets a place in their job where a minor inconvenience is enough to make it into a major like civil rights lawsuit. Like, for example, I've had to work in, I told you that 73 degrees is the only way I can work, but it's been 75 degrees for a month and no one's taking me seriously. And I could have a heat stroke. I have to quit, you know, and they make like a big drama out of something. You're like, that's not like a good reason to mm-hmm. lose your job. I think she's pulling one of those deals where she's going to come out swinging. And when most people would take the high road, she's like, I'm just going to complain about everything if it's warranted or not. And I'm going to put it in a book and I'll take the advance, the $1 million or whatever they'll give them to write a book. And then she'll put it out where she'll sell like 10,000 copies. But she'll get on all the television networks because they're very friendly to that type of message and liberals. And well, I don't know, is it coming out? I guess before Colbert is off the air. So you're talking about Kamala,
you're talking about Kamala's book, right?
I'm talking about Kim Jean-Pierre. Karine Jean-Pierre. That's what I'm talking about.
Okay, I was going to say, because Kamala was already on Stephen Colbert's
Oh, that's right.
show, talking about thing. Her book. Yeah, I would imagine that Karine Jean-Pierre would be on his show. Before. I mean, he's zero. He's just saying, whatever, you know, who cares? I'm just so mad at CBS and I'm mad at the world. That guy's going to self-implode.
Yeah.
He already kind of
Going
did.
Back to data guru Harry Enten there from CNN, he said, love it, like it, lump it. I'm going to do my best impersonation of him. Trump's remaking the United States of America. I can't think of a more influential president during this century. How's my Harry Enten? Is it pretty good?
Fantastic. You nailed the oh please. Yeah, that one you have down.
So he's looking at it and he's basically straight from the numbers. I can't think of a more influential president during this century. I would say so. I mean, when you think about the amount of things that he's influenced directly, what I've noticed too, at least when it comes to the personality of Trump, whenever there's anything that's done, it's Donald Trump direction, meaning it's because of him it's being done. If you go back to any other administration, they always say Biden administration is doing this, or Obama administration, Bush administration. They always put it on the group of people and the cabinet members making these decisions. For him, it is solely on Donald Trump making the decisions. That's pretty remarkable, all things considered, that he is the person in charge and he wants people to know it. And to me, that's what makes him the most influential president, I think, just from that standpoint alone. All right. When we come back, Nicole Murray this morning with Gordon Deal. Looking forward to catching up with her. 97.1 FM Talk. Hey, welcome back. I'm Ryan Recker filling in for Mark Cox. Ethan, you're doing a fantastic job this morning, too, by the way. You're right on top of orchestrating everything. You deserve a lot of credit here because I know it's not easy juggling everything that goes on behind the scenes there.
Thank you.
Good job, Ethan. All right. Let's go to Nicole Murray. Nicole, you're part of This Morning with Gordon Deal. There's a lot going on to start this week. How's it looking?
Looking pretty good. So right now, futures are moderately higher. Friday, the Dow Industrials lost 542, the NASDAQ down 472, and the S&P 500 down 101. Roughly 3,200 machinists who build Boeing fighter jets in the St. Louis area have gone on strike after their union failed to reach an agreement with the aircraft manufacturer. The strike also affects workers in Illinois and comes after the union rejected a modified four-year labor agreement with Boeing. The Fantastic Four First Steps raked in $40 million at this weekend's box office, claiming the number one spot. This is a 66% drop from its opening weekend debut. Meanwhile, Naked Gun opened with $17 million. U.S. Trade Representative Jamieson Greer said the tariffs President Trump imposed last week are likely to stay in place rather than be cut as part of continuing negotiations. Trump set rates including a 35% duty on many goods from Canada, 50% for Brazil, and more. Rising healthcare costs are nothing new, but a variety of factors, including inflation and pricey prescription drugs, have pushed them even higher over the past few years. Industry estimates say that in 2025, the cost of healthcare is on target to rise about 8% over 2024. A new Ally Bank survey says that nearly 60% of millennials and Gen Zers say their financial goals have been impacted by social spending, while experts added that spending time with friends and using financials on social events is not a bad thing. 42% of millennials and Gen Zers report overspending on their social budgets several months out of the year. And finally, Toronto is getting a daytime dance party at the end of the month for grown-ups who want to be in bed by 10 p.m. The party includes a live DJ, confetti blasts, CO2 cannons, and more, all before sunset.
I don't get that. If you're an adult that wants to go to bed early, why are you even considering dancing? Don't you just want, why 10 o'clock? Why not be in bed by 8 if you want to be in bed? Just forget the dancing.
Because people still want that environment where they can dance, let their hair down. They just want to do it till 2 in the morning.
I can't hang it one of those things that's till 2 in the morning. I just can't. I really am wiped by about 10. Maybe 11 on a weekend, maybe. But usually 9:30, 10, I'm zonked out.
So if I'll you want to, like, go ahead, sorry.
Well, basically, they can use the same facility, you know, because the ones that are younger that want to party all night don't show up till after 10 anyway.
That's true.
So they're basically finding ways to double their income at that one venue. But this ain't for guys. This is for women that want to drag their husbands out.
Oh, no, that's not true. You guys like to dance just as much as we do. I've seen proof.
It is true that in college, I remember you would have people over at your house, and then you would go out at quite literally 10:30 or 11 p.m. That was when you would start.
Yeah.
And stay out until, you know, 2 a.m. I'm like, oh, my gosh, how did I do this? This is just, it feels like a totally different life. Don't want any of that anymore.
Yeah, it gets old very, very fast. I didn't sleep a lot this weekend. I feel like I'm not even a person.
Yeah, she had you had a bachelorette party, right?
Yes, I did.
How was it?
It was a lot of fun, very nonstop, but not a lot of sleep. So I'm like kind of sort of here, not really, but yeah. Like we're doing our best.
I get it.
But I was out till 2 in the morning. Huh? Yeah, I was out until 2 in the morning. I have to say that. I was able to make it.
It was a Sunday night bachelorette party?
No, it was over the weekend.
Oh, over the week. Okay, so I thought, okay, yes. On a work day.
Oh, my
day,
gosh.
They do things differently now, Ryan, since you got married.
Yeah, clearly.
Well, I'm thinking. I was going to say, you're thrifty like me. You got to get the good deal, so Sunday night's cheaper, so you go for Sunday
night. Hey, I save money getting married on a Sunday. That's only because it was COVID era, and every venue was booked solid for basically a year on Saturday and even Fridays, and then they said Sunday, and I'm like, well, okay, I guess that's when I can get married sooner. And on top of that, hey, I saved some money. So whatever.
Whatever works.
All right. Nicole Murray, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate
it. Thanks so much. So, thanks so much, guys.
Oh, that's funny. No, you think guys like to go out dancing? Is that what you said, Kim? You believe
guys enjoy that?
No,
I don't think guys are going out dancing unless there's a lady that they're going with to dance. Yeah.
Yeah.
Next.
There's a certain type of guy that likes to go out dancing, and it's not guys that go out with ladies.
That is very fair.
But if my wife ever said, I want to go out dancing, I would know instantly she was taken over by aliens and replaced, because that would not be something she would ever say. You ever have like those TV shows where there's like a clone and you don't know which one to shoot? One's the bad guy, one's the good guy, and they look just like exactly the same. And if, let's say, it was both of them looked exactly like my wife, and one said, honey, let's go dancing after all of this is done. That's how I would know the clone I would have to shoot. That's the bad clone.
Yeah, that's true. You don't recommend, hey, we should go salsa dancing tonight. What do you think about that, honey? You don't tell your wife that?
Ryan looks like a salsa dancer.
You know, I can cut a rug. What are some more out of date terms about dancing?
What do you do? The sprinkler?
I can do the
jitterbug,
pop the grocery store thing. What's that? The thing where you're acting like you're pushing a cart down the aisle and you're grabbing items. Isn't that called
the grocer or something like that?
Something like that. People are making fun of us because we don't even know what it's called. I know there is something called the sprinkler.
Yeah, the lawnmower.
Yep.
See,
oh, the lawnmower.
Jay on YouTube is saying the only dancing that the guys are going to do is the football players who do their little weird dances after they get a touchdown.
A touchdown, yeah. That's an acceptable dance, 100% acceptable dance.
But
and
not
you can
always
dance with a bunch of dudes.
Somehow it's acceptable to smack each other's butts in sports. But any other occasion, that would be weird. But somehow it's encouraged almost to smack another dude's butt.
100%. That's 100% fine.
You don't give your waiter a good game?
Oh, well, of course I do. Yeah,
hey,
yeah.
Thanks for bringing me that steak. Yeah.
Of course I do.
Hey, that was great steak. I ordered it medium rare, and it was perfectly medium rare. Good thanks. Why is that a thing? Why can guys slap butts in sports, but it's not okay? I mean, I get why it's not okay in normal life. I don't think that's the question. I think the question is, why is it normal in sports?
Guys being dudes. I mean, that's exactly what
they're
it is.
Growing out.
You bro out by smacking each other's butts?
Yeah.
It's just part of the game. Yeah. And it's all in fun. And, you know, just based on this conversation, I'm going to try to do this to someone today in the office. Is that a good idea?
Smack someone's butt?
That's how you end up in HR.
Yeah, I can't wait for your... Well, just assume that Ryan won't be here tomorrow.
Yeah.
he'll be off.
Hey, good story. Yeah, that... I don't think it would work out there. You know what? Do you think that'll ever come back into fashion? Like, maybe in public it'll be as acceptable as a high five?
Well, there was an episode of, was it The Office? Or, no, it was Friends. There was an episode of Friends where Chandler Bing's boss was, you know, is a dude, and he would smack everyone's butt as they walked out of a meeting. And Chandler told him it was weird that he was doing that he wasn't comfortable with it. So he stopped, and then he was smacking everyone else's butt, and then Chandler felt left out. So eventually he wanted him to do it again.
All right, I'm going to go out on a limb here, so tell me if I'm off base, all right? And I might get in trouble. Well, let me ask this first. Ethan, are you married? I'm not sure.
I am, yes.
Okay. Husbands, when your wife tries to pick something off the ground, it happens,
You're
right?
You're just doing it.
You're just doing it. Every husband does it to their wife, right?
Yep.
100%. I think
it's like you go up the stairs. It's like,
yeah,
this is what happens.
Just husbands randomly do that to their wives, right?
Yep.
Okay. So I'm not going out on a limb. This happens to every single married man right now, only to their wife.
I hope only to their wife, except for the CEO, former CEO of Astronomer, maybe. Yes, I hope only to their wife.
In Coldplay concerts, yeah.
At Coldplay. It was a private affair they were trying to have, and Coldplay made it public. How dare they? They were trying to be private and respectful about the fact that they were cheating on their spouses, you know, with children. And dang it, Coldplay had to call them out on it. That was so unfair.
So busted. Yeah, that's right. Okay, so husbands do that not only to their wives, but in celebration at a football game, sometimes in baseball. Hockey, not so much. You don't see that in hockey.
No. Or wrestling.
In soccer, it's, no.
No, it's really football and baseball is where you see it.
Basketball, yeah, maybe?
No, I really?
Maybe.
I can't
like say
if
they're
I've
going
seen
into
it
their
too
huddle,
much in the NBA.
Like in the NBA.
Oh, like, maybe a little bit. Girls, maybe, I don't know. Imagine if the girls did that. Imagine if you had Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese smacking each other's butts on the sidelines of a WNBA game.
Yes, I would say they probably do.
I can't think of any sport where girls... I played lacrosse. We definitely didn't smack each other's butts there.
Is that right?
I did not expect the conversation to go this way, but you know, but this is eye-opening.
So we need to come up with a list of where it's somewhat acceptable and appropriate and other times where it's not. Mm-hmm. So football and sometimes baseball and to your wives is acceptable, and then it's unacceptable at a Coldplay concert and lacrosse.
anywhere else, I guess, it's unacceptable. Unless you're, you're a guy playing baseball or football somehow.
All right. Well,
glad we sorted this out.
Got off the rails.
All right, coming up in other news, I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Cox, 97.1.
What's happening?
Go, you know the thing.
What the hell is going on?
In other news.
What is going on anymore where Colbert is see you later, alligator, and now Jimmy Fallon is going to host Greg Gutfeld on The Tonight Show, which is kind of interesting. Gutfeld.
Why is that? I'm curious to see how this goes down, but what's the reasoning behind that? Because Gutfeld is doing so well and Fallon's failing, and so they're hoping that some of Gutfeld's viewers will want to watch The Tonight Show? Is that the thinking?
So I part of it to me believes the strategy is if you can't beat them, join them. Other part of the strategy is if it makes it look like we're all friends and, you know, we all have differences, but we have different types of ways we entertain. But at the end of the day, we just like to go out afterwards and, you know, we'll decompress together and, you know, we're not all so bad. I feel like this is the Tonight Show's way of saying, hey, conservatives, see, we're all friends. Why don't you give me a shot, too?
Probably true.
I don't know how that's going to play out with Gutfeld. I mean, he's got a much larger audience.
Yep.
I think his style's a lot different. It's quite frankly a lot more entertaining than The Tonight Show and these other ones. So.
Yeah. Does it say when that's airing? Isn't it coming up pretty soon?
August 7th?
Okay, so it's coming up this week then.
Thursday night.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Friday morning then we should have some clips from that. I'll be very curious. Hey, did you hear about this Minnesota meteorologist who has kind of gone viral because they were covering severe weather. This is the Rochester news station, KTTC, their chief meteorologist. So, you know, they do wall-to-wall coverage when it's a serious situation like that. And he was seen on camera holding up his phone, and you can see him furiously texting someone. And I guess he ended up getting a bunch of emails. People were mad saying it wasn't professional, and they were upset that he was, you know, texting or whatever he was doing when he was on the air. Well, he said, look, you know, my family, my wife and kids live here in this area, and I want to make sure that they're safe and they're aware of what's going on. So he's making no apologies for what happened. And I respect that. I get it. I mean, if you're on the air for hours on end and you don't really have a break, I can have some grace for the guy that he would want to text his wife and make sure that she and the kids are okay. So I don't know why people are that upset about it and they were offended that he did that. Is that really that big of a deal?
No, and, you know, quite frankly, I've done that before, working late nights and there's, you know, tornado warnings and things like that going on. And you're like, okay, they're probably asleep right now. I'm just going to call them. Like, while the weather was playing on, I would call them and just talk to them on the phone and tell them, hey, storm's coming. You got to get the kids down in the basement.
Right.
Because you get worried about these things. There was a meteorologist when I was working in Fort Wayne. His name was Curtis Smith. He would do this on television. He would call his family while on TV because he was the lone meteorologist. And he would basically let the green screen map do its thing. And he would just step aside and you would hear him calling his family in the background.
Wow.
Hey, get the kids down in the basement. And that had such an impact on me. I was like, you know what? I'm doing the same thing. He's right.
Wow.
You gotta
keep
your family safe.
It was effective that you heard him telling his own family that. That's a good point. Interesting.
Yeah. You know, the WNBA has a controversy right now because fans keep bringing these sex toys to throw on the court. And
why?
The players are very upset about this. Here's, once you open up that Pandora's box, you know people are going to be doing this for the end of time at WNBA games, right? Like, in Detroit, they throw the octopus on the ice. People find ways to sneak it in even though you're not allowed to do it. You know, once you realize they don't want you to do it and people online are getting a reaction and laughing, some joker is going to be doing this all the time now. So you have to be careful. The Streisand effect in instances like this, fans will get ejected. A one-year ban for throwing these objects on the court. Players hate it. Fans, I'm sure, hate it because, you know, that's not really the thing you want to be throwing on the court to... because it's kind of gross.
It's gross.
You know, it's demeaning and humiliating because they're trying to play sports. And I find that airport security is going to be on high alert right now. Anything
what do you
that
bring in
like,
your suitcase? What is under the shirt?
And honestly, this is going to sound gross. I don't know what women keep in their purses. I'm guessing some women might have things that may be questionable that are going to start getting rejected immediately at the gate. And it's going to be very embarrassing for some people.
This whole thing is weird. I think Sophie Cunningham or whatever her name is, she kind of went off about that whole situation. Well, here's a weird relationship. Best Buy and IKEA are partnering up. And what they're going to do is they're going to have, you know, have you been to IKEA, right, Ryan? Where they have
Of course.
I mean, actually, this is one of my favorite parts of IKEA. They have all those little, what do you call them? Like a room setup. What am I thinking of?
Full displays.
Thank you.
A display center,
whatever. Anyway, they're going to have like mini display centers from IKEA in the middle of Best Buy. Now, they're only rolling this out so far in 10 different IKEA stores. And unfortunately, none in Illinois or Missouri. But if this is successful, it sounds like this could be a thing. So Texas and Florida, I think, are the test markets to see how effective this is. but IKEA could be coming to a Best Buy near you. I mean, I don't know how many people are going to Best Buy in person these days. So maybe they're hoping this will drive more traffic. I don't know.
Fantastic idea. You know, especially for kids setting up dorm rooms when they're in small spaces anyway. They want to see what a TV would look like in that space or whatever.
Good call.
I think super smart collaboration. So good for them. And I don't know. I feel like this is going to be a good thing to get people in and maybe a little bit more enjoyable. All right, I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Cox. Don't go anywhere. 97.1 FM Talk.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.